Ladies and gentlemen, we're now going to take a number of questions from the audience. There's a microphone here in the center of the room. There's a center aisle for you to walk up to it. You can address your questions to all three of the rabbis or to any one in particular one that you would like. And I just make one request, if I can, that the questions remain short. Rather than, we're not looking for speeches, we're looking for questions.
I would like the Yaakov Fogelman, I would like the rabbi's comments on a few things. As I see it, as someone who came from America and lives here, indeed Israel does have a great sense of Kehillah in our modern Orthodox community. I mean, it focuses around Bar Ilan. Next Sunday will be the Levi and Adah conference, a most impressive thing. And I think at many, many events and conferences, the people do meet, perhaps more than similar people in the States. The other question I'd like to ask is, it seems to me that a great problem with the Jewish religion is you have so many people in it, especially the most intense, who really don't give a darn about anybody else in the world or what's going on or the state of Israel and so forth. And this naturally drives people away. And I'd like your comments on one example, now that's really happening, when the alleged Gedolim recently persecuted Rav Slifkin. It's gotten to the point.
Brief.
Yeah, it will be. It's gotten to the point now where all through the internet, New York Times, Moment, this is being discussed all over the world, and there seems to be some break in the Haredi community's blind admiration of such authoritarian figures, which just won't attract modern people. I'd like your comments on the Slifkin affair and Rabbi Yashov and so forth.
Thank you very much. Is there one particular rabbi that would like to take that question?
I'll take the first part of the question, not the last part.
Okay, we ran there.
I just, on the first part, I'm not going to deal with the last part of it for so many different reasons. First of all, by dealing with it, you just give it a little bit more chashivut than it deserves. But I want to just, if I can, before I just deal with the first part of the question, I'd like to post some lichvod chasanya. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Howard Weisband and the entire Yeshiva University staff for putting this together and a whole bunch of other events together. And also, I promised him at the last event that I spoke at I wouldn't recognize him, but I didn't say anything about this one. So I'd like to acknowledge the Vice President of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Davis, who's also here.
Rabbi Davis, can you stand up for a minute? Do we all know who you are? Great, thank you.
I don't think the definition of community is defined by conferences. That's not the definition of community. The definition of community is when at 2 o'clock in the morning you get a phone call that Rachmana Litzlan, something happened in a family, and by 8 o'clock in the morning not only has the Rav been there to be with the family, but the food has been taken care of for the next week, the carpools have been taken care of for the children to go to school. There's someone coming in to keep the home the way it should be. I define community that when a child is born, that immediately there is an infrastructure which makes sure that the mother and other children, their needs are being dealt with. I define community that when somebody walks into shul on Shabbat and they're there for the first time or the second time, that they're not greeted by blank stares, but by something I learned in the Beit Knesset that Rabbi Riskin built, Lincoln Square Synagogue, that there are greeters. And I was able to take what Rabbi Riskin built in Lincoln Square Synagogue and on a smaller model, build it in Boca Raton. That's the definition of community. Conferences are important. All conferences are important. But that's not what community is. Community is not an existential, intellectual experience. It's that also, and then we can have a whole discussion on the role of knowledge and the machloket between Plato and Isocrates and Socrates, whether it's for community or not for community. But in the Kishkas, what community is to create a network of services and a feeling of the ability for there to be a certain fabric, a certain understanding of the entire tapestry, and the recognition that every color in that tapestry counts. And if one color in the tapestry is compromised, then the entire tapestry loses its beauty.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think we'll all agree, I think we'll all agree to we'll skip the second part of the question to give an opportunity for some other questions. Mr. Lariskin, do you have a comment on the second part of the question?
Fundamentalist Jews are entitled to their own community as well. We should not feel threatened by it, and we should be able to say nonsense.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Yes.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bronson, and I have two. Is that okay if I ask two questions?
Let's try.
First, I wanted to know, in light of the event that you had with 29 other rabbanim, and the ideal of unity within the religious Zionist camp, already the questions are being floated about the future of Yehuda and Shomron, and I'm wondering, in light of what happened in Gaza, what does it mean for us to have unity regarding Yehuda and Shomron? What would we encourage people to do or not do or stick up for or not stick up for? And my second question is, Rabbi Riskin, you addressed the criticism against the religious Zionists that we've forgotten our position as a bridge between secular Zionists and the Haredim. I've also heard another criticism, which is that after 1967 in particular, religious Zionism became a one-issue movement, and that was the settlements, and that there was not nearly enough discussion about social welfare, education in general for Israel, poverty, the economy, foreign policy, and all these other areas where presumably Judaism has something to say, and yet religious Zionists were not raising their voices. And so I was wondering if you could address that criticism as well. Thank you.
Rabbi Lau, I'll take the first part of the question.
אני אשיב מאוד מאוד בקצרה. דבר ראשון, הנקודה של גוש קטיף, של ההתנתקות, בבת אחת נתנה לכולם להבין שההתנתקות של גוש קטיף הייתה ההתנתקות השנייה. לפני גוש קטיף הציונות הדתית התנתקה מהחברה הישראלית. את זה היום כולם מבינים. והמשימה הלאומית, יושב פה, עומד פה מרק בלסברג, והוא יכול לספר לכם איך שהרב אלון מוביל בחברה הישראלית תנועה של חיבור התורה והציונות לכל המקומות שצריך, פנים אל פנים. היום אנחנו מבינים שהתנתקנו לפני ההתנתקות. מאוחר מדי בשביל גוש קטיף, עצוב לומר, אבל לא מאוחר בשביל מקומות אחרים בארץ. אנחנו צריכים להיות שם בכל מקום שהחברה הישראלית נמצאת, כל החברה הישראלית. וזה הסיבה שאנחנו ישבנו שם, כדי להפסיק לריב בתוכנו ולהתחיל ביחד לפעול לתקן את החברה הישראלית מבפנים ולא מבחוץ. וזה קשור לשאלה השנייה שלך. במוצאי שבת, אתמול בערב, הקמנו ביחד, זה קשה להאמין, אבל הקמנו ביחד בית מדרש שיעסוק בענייני חברה, רק בענייני חברה, לתקן את השאלות של החברה בישראל, בית המדרש הזה יביא רבנים צעירים מכל הישיבות. כל ישיבה נותנת רב אחד שהוא יהיה בתוך הבית מדרש הזה. once a week באים לבית המדרש ללמוד בחברותה ביחד סוגיות של חברה, לחזור לישיבה, ללמד וליצור שיחה שהנושא של בית המדרש הציוני דתי הוא לא רק ארץ ישראל, אבל הוא מחובר לכל מה שמעסיק את עם ישראל. זה עולם של תשובה.
Thank you, Rabbi Riskin.
In precisely the respect in which Rav Lau spoke now, both of the questions are united together. You know, the Rebbe Reb Zisha once told a very beautiful incident that he was in an inn. And he was up learning very late because the dining room of the inn was the only place where there was lighting. And there were a few drunks in the inn as well. And two drunks are talking. And one says to the other, Ivan, you don't love me. Ivan says, I do love you. You don't love me. I do love you. Then if you love me, tell me what hurts me. Because only if you can tell me what hurts me and help remove the hurt, only then do you love me. The difficulty with one issue, religious Zionists, is that what they are expressing by not hurting the hurt of the non-religious Zionists is precisely this kind of separatism. And there's no question it can be argued that they moved further away from us. And that also happened. Further away from love of the land, further away from love of Tanakh. There's no question that both of us moved. However, I believe, and that was what I meant when I told the Midrash about Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech Reid Ki Shichet Amcha, that we have that responsibility of spreading Torah, but not spreading Torah because we have all the answers and we just have to give them all the answers and everything will be fine. Truly trying to love every Jew, exposing them to us and exposing ourselves to them, and respecting even those who choose not to accept our way. Because if God gave freedom of choice, we dare not give any less. And what we've got to strive to do in all this is create a common language and a common culture. It can work. I'll give you just one very brief example. A number of years ago, actually it was one of our initiatives, but together with Rabbanei Tzohar, we made all sorts of radio announcements, radio ads. One day a year, the Matnasim in Israel, the JCCs, the Jewish centers, are closed. One day a year, Yom Kippur. We asked them to give us free room, and they agreed. Religious Jews in Israel are allergic to synagogues. It's a long story as to why, but I think they have good reason. But nevertheless, synagogue is not necessarily the place of the meeting between religious and non-religious. But everybody goes to the Jewish center, to the matnas, of every stripe. So our ad said, for those who are not used to going to Yom Kippur services, but are curious about what Yom Kippur is, free, come as you are, an explanatory service, Tfilas Baratit, for Israelis. An hour and 15 minutes Kol Nidre, an hour and 15 minutes Ne'ila. I once had a Gabbai who said, Rebbe, it doesn't matter when the services begin, it only matters when the services end. And certainly, non-observant Jews want to know how long they're in for. So, an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes. I don't have the statistics about this Yom Kippur. But by last Yom Kippur, which was the third year, we had over 25,000 Jews who considered themselves secular in over 100 matnasim in these services. The fact is that there's an interesting thirst here for culture and for Jewish culture. If it's not through legislation, if it's not being rammed down people's throats, but if they're being exposed to it. And the same thing goes for Israel and relationship to Israel and Bible and relationship to Bible and Jewish history and relationship to Jewish history. This is what we've got to do. This is a critically important mandate.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Riskin. This is Willie has a comment.
My name is Toby Willick. I want to ask a few questions, if I may. One, in terms of Kehillah, what would happen if a rabbi would get to know every member in his community? Those who sometimes attend synagogue, those who never attend synagogue, and those who are synagogue members. What would happen? Because I base this on the moderate success of Punim, if he would go and say, I am Rabbi so-and-so, here, if I can help you, we service you in this way, that way, what are the problems? I think it would make an enormous difference. I know in most synagogues, the rabbi barely knows the people who come to the synagogue. That is sort of the Israeli way. You come to shul, and maybe the rabbi says a few words, maybe he doesn't. He is the community rabbi, period, but he doesn't know the community at all. So what would happen if there would be an outpouring of religious Zionist rabbis going all over, transporting themselves in the land and getting to know the people? Would it make a difference? Secondly, what would happen if religious Zionism acted as a moral force? Let's assume that disengagement, of course, took place with everything, but you have 8,000-9,000 people lying all over, being all over, no provisions made by the government in reality. Don't we have anything to say about making refugees without hope for the future in our own land? I mean, we are concerned about the world, and we should be. But if we're not concerned about ourselves, who are we? And thirdly, even in terms of the land, I recall when Ehud Barak came out with the idea of compromise. Fine, but what is compromise to the extent that you give up really what you completely believe in? Do we really believe that we should have rights underground in the Beis HaMikdash? That would be compromise. So we really need to wrestle with ourselves and come out with a program that most of us can adhere to and say, this is the message of religious Zionism. We want to have idealism. We want to inculcate our young people and even our jaded older people with the message that there is hope and that we stand for something positive.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Willick. Rabbi Riskin, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, let me start with the first thing that Toby mentioned. I think there's something that everybody here has got to understand. The difference between the typical American rabbi and the typical Israeli rabbi, but how he works within the structure. What would happen, asked Toby, if rabbis would get to know all the names of the members of their community? Well, it's very rare that in Israel a rabbi has a community. Again, it's very rare that in Israel a rabbi has a community. In America, a rabbi is elected by a board of directors of a community of families who pay dues to a synagogue. The rabbi comes into the synagogue with a very, very clear mandate to service the members of his synagogue. In Israel, that very rarely exists. The rabbi is usually politically appointed to be the rabbi of a community and to take care of the religious needs of the community, but the community can span many synagogues. Officially, I'm the only paid rabbi in Efrat, and we have over 10,000 people. Now, you know, I've always said that a rabbi, let's put it better, God should be the Rosh HaMemshala of the cosmos. In Israel, we made him the minister of religions. And most rabbis are bureaucrats, in a positive sense even, of the religious ministry, which means they have to service kashrut, mikveh, synagogue. For the entire area that is their political bailiwick. This is very problematic. It's a whole different kind of system. I think now that the Mishrat HaDatot has sort of been destroyed, I don't think it means that God has no position. I think he may be freed up to fill a much broader and larger position. And there may begin to be rabbis of communities. But the structure is a difficult structure. I think it's possible, certainly, for individual rabbis to try to change that structure from within, to make it a point to try to have members, to try to get to know members. Rabbi Lau is an example of someone who's an exceedingly successful community rabbi and is the exception who proves the rule. But I want you to realize that the structure is a different kind of structure, and the rabbis from within will have to change that structure. My own experience is that wherever it's happening, it's being accepted with a tremendous amount of excitement and enthusiasm.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Brander. Some comments.
I think the greatest strength that a rabbi has in America is that strength, and that is that a rabbi is elected by his board of directors, but boards of directors that have a greater wisdom understand that the role of the rabbi is not just to service their particular synagogue, but the role of their rabbi is to service truly the community. I'll never forget that when we made this move to Boca 14 years ago, and I was faxed my contract, the last paragraph of the contract said that while you're officially the rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue, part of your responsibility is to understand that you are truly the rabbi to the community, and we look forward to you reaching out to the extended Jewish community. I believe that if that dynamic can be shared in a fashion in which rabbanim, who are extremely competent, and most rabbanim, I believe, have a certain competence clearly in halacha, but if they're introduced to the idea of not being bureaucrats, but perhaps creating a venue in which some of that can be delegated to others so that they can have an open door policy, so when they have large synagogues, there's maybe an hour or two or three a week in which basically it's non-defined time, so a congregant who's uncomfortable making an appointment knows that there's a certain time where the rabbi's in his office and he's available for anyone who wants. And a rabbi goes out there and creates different types of meetings within homes, because a home is a much better place to gather people than sometimes the sterile environment of a ballroom of a synagogue. I think that you can really transform communities around Eretz Israel. And I hope that in discussions that Rabbi Lau and I started for a few moments before this, and please God, will continue for very long after this, that we'll find a way to be able to share with each other, so that your idea, Mrs. Willig, of creating ways in which rabbis can truly serve communities is one that truly happens here, and I truly believe that it will give greater strength to the religious Zionist, modern Orthodox, whatever you want to call it, community in Israel.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Brander. Thank you.
Have a different kind of comment and a different kind of question, but this is a Yeshiva University venue, and on our podium we have also one present rabbi from America and one former rabbi from America. And I was a little bit saddened when Rabbi Lau mentioned there was one word that was not mentioned for some reason, the word modern Orthodox. But I didn't hear one word that I expected to hear, and that was the word Aliyah. And I was rather surprised, because it seems to me that one of the most important things that we can do for modern religious Zionism in Israel is to have religious Zionists from America come here. Not just to bring their ideas, as Rabbi Lau suggested, but to bring the people who've been practicing these ideas, who've been strengthening these ideas, who've been working at these ideas for so many years. Isn't it time for them to come? I know that I teach in a secular school in Yerushalayim, and I know that I represent something that I think is very powerful, and I think every American does. We represent people. As wonderful as Rabbi Lau is, he's my teacher, and I think that the things that he does here are amazing. But I also think we need to look at what Rav Rizkin has done here. As an American rabbi who came here by choice from a place like Lincoln Square, Manhattan, where 90% of secular Israelis would love to be, and came here and said, I would rather be here, by choice, from behind the golden curtain. And it seems to me, it's a question, it's a statement, but why aren't we pushing Ali Amor? Nefesh B'Nefesh is doing a wonderful job. And by the way, the fact that it inspires so many people and invigorates so many people shows how powerful Aliyah from North America, particularly from America, could be. Again, if I haven't heard the word, I'd like to hear the word more. Why aren't we bringing many, not just 5,000 or 6,000, many, many, many Americans here?
I have a feeling, Rabbi Brander, that question was directed at you.
I'm shocked. I think there are two answers to the question. I hope that I'll answer them. I'll give you both my answers. I think the first answer is, you know, I'm blessed to be able to answer the question in a very positive light, because around 10 years ago in Boca, we started a kollel. It was the first Yeshiva University kollel. I went to Rabbi Lam and I asked him to fund it. I told him it would be the greatest thing for YU. He said to me, Kenny, I'll let you take the boys, but you have to raise every penny yourself. I got more than enough money to raise. You start raising some money. I took 4 boys from Yeshiva University. Most of them were not too much older than myself. They had not yet finished smicha, and Yeshiva University made Boca Raton Synagogue and its kollel a adjunct to Yeshiva University and allowed them to finish their smicha at Yeshiva University. We had a radio program. I'm getting to the point. We had a radio program in which we were able to communicate words of Torah. And the Kollel member that I assigned to that program, who for the first time was speaking in a public arena, came to me to resign from the Kollel because he had never spoken in front of anyone before, and let alone on a radio station. And therefore, he thought this was not his job. He wanted to go immediately back to New York and have nothing to do with speaking in front of people anymore. He wanted to think about going back into applying for medical school. I told him he has 6 months to get over his fear. We'll work on it together. And then he's going to do this job that I assigned him. If not, he can go back. After spending 2 years in the Kollel, he became my first assistant rabbi, then promoted to the associate rabbi, and then had this crazy idea that he asked that the community pay him for a few months to incubate a project, and that the members of the community contribute millions of dollars to. The person I'm talking about is Rabbi Josh Fass, and the program is called Nefesh B'Nefesh. So there are definitely important projects that communities are involved in that have cost at least the Boca community literally millions and millions of dollars heretofore. And there are those who had a lot of complaints about the fact that I allowed a person who was, at least for the first 6 months, paid by the synagogue to create a program like this and take money from the community while it was trying for the first time to build its own institutions. But clearly, our larger mandate is the meta-narrative of supporting those that want to make Aliyah. And therefore, I think it is important that the Orthodox Jewish community do whatever is necessary to encourage Aliyah, whether it is to celebrate those who make Aliyah, whether it is to speak about it from the pulpit, whether it is to make it viewed as something that is holy and to truly recognize that value. And I think on that level, there are many of us who have succeeded in celebrating that idea. The second piece of the second answer is for me personally. This is a struggle regarding my own personal making Aliyah, which is very much part of your question. And the question I need to ask myself is, do I service the Jewish community better by living here in the apartment that we own here, or better in the house that we own in America? And there have been times, and I've spoken to Rabbi Riskin about this so much, and Rav Lichtenstein and others, and there have been times in which I've felt that the best thing I should do is show an example and make Aliyah. And then there are those times that I realize that perhaps if I showed an example, perhaps that may inspire a few. But if we work on making sure that there's a network of religious Zionist schools, and we work on, and promote Aliyah that way, and work on making sure that rabbis who are committed to the notion of religious Zionism don't feel alone, perhaps in the long run I'll do a bit more for the cause. Some might view that as a cop-out. I view it as a struggle that there isn't a week that goes by without me struggling to deal with it. But I do believe that Aliyah, thanks to Rabbi Fass and many others, is a major agenda and a major focus throughout North America. 7 plane loads last year, and please God, a whole bunch more next year. And I think that the Jewish community is more focused on Aliyah now than they were 5 or 10 years ago. And please God, they will continue to be more focused on it, and we should support it in any way that we can.
Thank you very much. Last comments, Rabbi Riskin.
I'd like to sort of put something in perspective. I think that there are two different concepts. Rabbi Lau brought it up initially in what he said, and I think it was brought to the fore by the last questioner in a very, very real way, that dare not be confused. religious Zionism and modern Orthodoxy. The two are not at all congruent. Religious Zionism is predicated upon the fact that, as our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik always said, it's a compound noun. It's not a noun and an adjective. It's a compound noun that a religious Jew is ipso facto a Zionist and understands that he ought live in Israel, all things being equal. Religious Zionism says that we have, in the modern context at least, that we have a duty to build up the state of Israel as religious a state as possible. That's religious Zionism. Modern Orthodoxy says that halacha, Orthodoxy, can live comfortably in the modern world. There are many rabid modern Orthodox Jews who are not very much concerned about Israel at all. There are many strong religious Zionists, probably the strongest, as Rabbi Lau mentioned, Merkaz Harav, for example, who are dead set against any kind of university training. So there are two separate issues. Modern Orthodoxy wasn't mentioned here, at least not by me, and perhaps not by Rabbi Brander, and only by Rabbi Lau, in order to make clear the distinction that I've just spoken of, because that wasn't the topic. The topic is religious Zionism. The topic is not modern Orthodoxy. Separate issue. Now, obviously they can converge. Obviously, in many cases, modern Orthodox Jews were very pro-Israel and Zionism. But it doesn't have to be that way. And it's not definitionally necessary. It's necessary for it to be that way. Now, I must say, and here I feel very strongly about this, it's very difficult. It's very possible for a rabbi in America to talk about Zionism and moving to Israel. But there's a built-in problem when that takes place. And that's precisely the very honest tension that Rabbi Brander legitimately feels. When I first took Lincoln Square and it was a mixed-seated synagogue, Rav Soloveitchik made three stipulations. Number one, that I not live in the area of the synagogue. Number two, that I not take any money, and number three, for being the rabbi of the synagogue, and number three, that I clearly not daven with the people in the shul, that they know that I'm conducting the services, but I daven myself earlier. Because he said correctly, you cannot preach for mechitza and the necessity of mechitza if your congregants see that you are davening in a mechitzaless shul. A rabbi cannot say, do as I say and not as I do. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. They work for doctors. It doesn't work for rabbis, and it doesn't work for parents. Congregants and children will learn from what you do. Therefore, you can have a rabbi who certainly encourages Aliyah and speaks of Aliyah, but there will always be, I mean, if it were really so important, Rabbi, so how come you're here and you're not there? And that's true. That's not to say that the tension is not an honest tension. And that I believe the only people who probably have a real right to be in America are full-time rabbis and educators. Because they have to teach Torah to wherever Jews are, and they have to teach Torah as best as they can teach it. But nevertheless, they can create, as Roy Branda has done, the right kind of atmosphere which produced the Nefesh B'Nefesh, which has been of enormous importance. But bottom line, therefore, I believe that the greatest thing that can do the religious Zionist job in communities is by having kolelim from Israel. If it's to be a mixture of Yeshiva University rabbis and Israeli rabbis, I understand that too. But it must have Israeli people who are from Israel and who give the spirit of Israel and who represent the spirit of Israel by going back to Israel. And they will ultimately be the best models for Aliyah, and that I think is critical.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll just ask, I'm going to give each rabbi the opportunity to kind of just give a one-line mission statement that they believe defines the future of religious Zionism. I'll start with Rabbi Lau.
One sentence.
In Hebrew. As long as you want.
מי שלמד פעם ספרים של הרב קוק יודע שמשפט אחד זה יכול להיות ספר. זו תמיד שאלה אם אתה אופטימי או פסימי. אני אדם אופטימי, ואני חושב שכשנמצאים במשבר, ואנחנו במשבר, הקיץ הזה הוא קיץ שגרם לנו למשבר, אבל משבר זה גם בעברית. אומרים לי על אישה שהיא בזמן לידה יושבת על המשבר. זה המקום שממנו יוצאים חיים חדשים. והמשבר יכול להוליד באמת כוחות טובים וחדשים עם המון אחריות. אנחנו צריכים ללמוד הרבה מאוד, קצת יותר ענווה, קצת יותר הקשבה איש לרעהו, ללמוד מה שיש בארץ לחול ומה שיש בחול לארץ. וכשנלמד את הסוד הזה של נותנים רשות זה לזה להקדיש ליוצרם בנחת רוח, בשפה ברורה ובנעימה, אנחנו נצא מהשבר ומהמשבר הזה בעזרת השם לבניין של מדינת ישראל ושל החברה הישראלית והחברה היהודית, בעזרת השם בניין עדי עד.
Thank you, Rabbi Lau. Rabbi Brander.
I believe that we're living in the most exciting time in history since the time of the Second Beit HaMikdash, and I would suggest even more exciting than that time. And it's a privilege to be part of the religious Zionist movement, and because I believe that that movement has the opportunity to really seize the moment and to achieve greatness during this special time in which we have been blessed with the chesed of Hashem. And although I believe that rabbis in America are junior partners in the process, we're nevertheless partners. And it's time to understand the message that we all need to work together. That there cannot be fights within our machaneh, that we need to understand that whatever differences we may have, we must overcome those. And that if we're truly going to be able to speak truth to power and our message, we're going to have to be able to do it by making sure that all YU Kolelim have members from Eretz Yisrael in the Kolelim, that the lessons that we can learn from our Chaverim in Eretz Yisrael and the lessons they can learn from us are organized in a way in which there is this cross-pollination. And if we do that, then we truly will be zocha to see that the ideas that we pray for and the ideas that we live by will truly be actualized in our lifetime.
Thank you.
made Aliyah to Israel because I felt that bottom line, in America, at best, one could be a footnote, an important footnote, but still a footnote to Jewish history, whereas in Israel, the chapter headings are being written. Nevertheless, Israel is too important to be left to the Jews in Israel alone. The Gemara says that every Jew has four amot in Israel. With that gift also comes responsibility. Please understand, American Jewry must understand, the argument in Gush Katif, disengagement, non-disengagement, was interpreted by the overwhelming majority of Israeli interpreters as a religious, non-religious divide. If the entire settlement movement is destroyed, it can be a knockout punch for religious Jewry. I think it's very important that we here work hard to mend fences and recreate as much as we can one community with differences. But nevertheless, understanding that what unites us is far greater than what divides us. We need religious Zionist Jews in America who understand what's truly at stake to be with us, because the period ahead promises to be fraught with many challenges and perhaps even difficulties. But I truly believe that if we work together, we'll succeed.
Thank you, Howard Weisband. Thank you, Yeshiva University. Thank you, everybody, for coming tonight and for fostering this very, very productive and fruitful discussion. I'm sure that your seeds were planted that will have an impact for many years to come. Thank you.